In the Fale is a music show on ABC Radio Australia, hosted by me, Paola Tukefu. I'll be spinning my favorite tunes from dancehall to disco, calypso to country, reggae to roots, and hip-hop to house music, from across the eras to keep the kids and the aunties happy. If it has a pumping groove, I'll be bringing it to you to bump you into the weekend.
Search up In the Fale to listen online or find it in the ABC Listen app.
This is an ABC podcast.
This is Nijan Footy with Sam Wykes and Jinidar Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Ma lola le and happy Tongan Language Week to all our Tongans across the Pacific, and welcome to Nijan Footy, where me and my koe Sammy Wykes, we get to talk about footy in both coach rugby league and rugby union, but we get to keep our Pacifica flavour. Sammy, happy Tongan Language Week, my brother.
See, happy Tongan Language Week. Have you got something for me besides just malolele? Hello.
Saipe.
Saipe, yes. Saipe. Okay, I like it. Like I've
what
got
does
some,
that mean?
Yeah, all goods.
Yeah. Yes. Saipe?
Yeah.
Oh, so it just means all goods. I thought it's like, how are you?
No, I'm Saipe. Saipe. Ew, Saipe.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
I got that from my good friend, Sisai Vave. Saipe.
Yeah. But it is Tongan Language Week, and
what do you got for me, brother?
I've got something for you. I'm going to introduce myself. Right, so
I love this.
You love it?
Okay. I love it.
Malolele, ko hoku hingoa, ko Sam Wykes, o ko lele mai mei, tataku motonga mua. I just said that's my name, where my mum's village is from, and I'm going to give you one more. My Tongan word for today is puha.
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 That's not puaka, eh?
Nah.
Puha.
Means box.
Means box.
Just a box. Go grab the box. Just a
Where
random
did that
one.
Come
just
from?
A random one when you're always moving stuff around. And there's a mai puha. So,
what about boxing in the ring? Would it be buhain?
See, my Tongan isn't great, but buhain, I don't think that that is a word. But anyway, that's my Tongan for this week. But on the show, we have a big one planned, round 24 of the NRL, some massive games. We'll go through a couple of debuts that really caught my eye through that round. We've also got Rugby Union, Australia versus Japan, New Zealand versus the Bulls. And we have a special guest. We're going to stick with Rugby Union. His name is Tian Tau Akipulu. And I guess what's going to be important about this chat is the fact that sometimes when you chase your rugby league or Rugby Union dream of one day playing at the highest level, you get everything you want when you get there. But the hardest thing is probably staying there. And then there's always this thing around injuries.
The commitment.
The commitment to
the
it.
The journey of
the
staying
journey.
There.
Sometimes people fall out of love with what they always wanted.
Mm.
And for Tian, he decided to hang the boots up at the age of 24.
Retire,
age of 24. After a couple of injuries, you know, a couple of lifelines being thrown. He was with the Waratahs, came over as a schoolboy sensation after making New Zealand schools. And made his debut early, injuries, then went to the Western Force. 24, especially as a prop, you are going to have a long career well after the age of 24 as a prop. You peak at the age of 27, but, man, stick around for this one because it's a chat that I think it's worthwhile hearing, because if it's not for you, it's okay to say it's not for you. So that will be Tian Tau Akipulu later on the show, but let's get up to let's talk rugby league first.
Looking forward to that chat. Nice, Sammy.
Hi, my name is Sitaliki Timani, and you're listening to Nijan Footy.
Yes, Nijan Footy, NRL, round 24. Can you believe we've only got three more games left?
I can't, actually. It just seems this, like, once you get over that little hump of, like, the halfway point after Origin, it just seems like it goes quick to finals footy.
Yeah, it comes around fast.
Yep.
And you just see so the pressure at this time of year, you see a lot of pressure with some of the teams where, you know, one making top eight. Now, if they don't make top eight, there's also a time, this is a time where some players who aren't contracted for next year, you know, they're in that limbo of like, oh man, I need to get re-signed, or, you know, what's next? And there's that pressure of performing in those last few games. So there's plenty to play for. And then with the Dragons winning on the weekend, there's also a few teams that don't want to finish at the bottom of the
ladder. They don't
want
the wooden spoon.
Because no one wants the wooden spoon.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I got one when I was at the Cronulla Sharks in 2014.
Russ.
But that was when the players all got suspended. Paul Gallen, all our leaders, even our coach got suspended.
Yeah, tough times at the Sharkies.
Two years later, they went and won the competition. But round 24, there were some great scores across the line. Now, the Dolphins, I have to mention, their performance against the Manly Sea Eagles they jumped into the top four after the weekend with their 22-0 victory in Manly against the Sea Eagles. Now, Jermaine Isako, I thought he was a standout for me. He had 21 runs, 291 meters, scored a try and a try assist, but it was his try assist that made me giggle because he intercepted, sprinted down the field, and he knew he wasn't going to get to the end, so he passed it to his teammate Jack Bostock to score in the corner.
Joey Walsh, centre pass, it's intercepted. Flying downfield, though, for the Dolphins now is Jermaine Isako. Over the 40, over the 30, over the 20. Links up on the inside, Bostock. Angle run to the corner, he's over to score a try. They've gone length of the field, the Dolphins with an intercept from Jermaine Isako. Finished off by Jack Bostock.
Yeah, impressive win by the Dolphins, 22 points, and then holding the Sea Eagles to zero. That's, when you think about coaches and probably what they would prefer more, I think they always love the fact that if you can hold a team to zero, they'll take that any day of the week, even if it was 8-0. They would probably take that over a 60-30 type of scoreline at any day of the week. So what do you think, what that does to a side when you can keep a team to nil?
80 minutes of footy, and you're playing up against a team that has, Haumole Olokoatu, and has some great players in our game, but to be able to keep them to nil for the Dolphins at this time of the year as well, it can only give confidence to them in these last few games going into the finals. But the thing I want to acknowledge for the Dolphins was 4 games ago, they lost to the Sharks 66 points to nil. Only 4 games ago. Since then, they've won 4 in a row. But before that 66-0, they had beaten teams like Roosters, the Warriors. They went on a mad run. Everyone was talking about the Dolphins until Sharks put 66 points on them. And I think after that game, you asked, does that mean, is that over for the Dolphins? But sometimes teams needed that loss to, get back into gear, shake things up at training, and just hold boys accountable. And then now they're going on this nice little run, and with the 22-0 game against the Manly, I think that they're in a good position. Now, I want to mention the Eels versus the Cowboys. The Eels causing the upset, 32 points to 30. And there was a couple things I want to mention in this game. Firstly, Josiah Funa. He made his NRL debut. But this caught your eye, Sammy.
Yeah, his mum Minna. I sort of know them, not closely, but I do. His younger brother Levi, he's in France at the moment, playing rugby union, big boy, and so I've just seen him play in some of our Tongan tournaments over the years, and I just loved the jersey presentation when his mum got to present Josiah his debut jersey, and I don't think I'll ever get sick of seeing family members present jerseys to their son or to their daughter. Such a special occasion because you really get to hear why they play the game, the sacrifices that were made, the tough journey, the challenges. And just have a listen to his mum here just talking about how hard it was for her as a single mum.
Zay, one thing I've always told my kids is everything's earned and nothing's given. Zay wasn't born into the easiest of circumstances. I was a young single mum. We made it work. Zay, from all the late nights and early mornings, nothing stopped you from getting to where you needed to be. Zay, you showed up when things weren't easy. You worked when nobody was watching. I just want you to remember, as you put on this jersey tomorrow, son, not only does it represent your team, the club you play for, you're carrying your siblings, your family, your friends, and your whole entire village. Everyone who helped you get to where you are today. We might have started from behind compared to other people, but look at how far you've come, and you've done that. And this is only the beginning.
Yeah, nice pickup, Sammy. I thought my moment in this game was the Samoan skipper, Junior Paolo. Right, there was a play where the ball was moving. He gets it and he throws this, must have been 30-meter cutout pass.
You could see him wind up, eh? That high elbow ready to
go. He clocked it and he just ripped it right to left, landed in the center's pocket, and then they've gone on and scored off the back of that pass.
Talangi's there, but no one wants it. It comes off the boot in the end of Will Benson. He's still the last. They spin it long left-hand side. Sean Russell is on the park, gets it away to Jordan Samrani, who scores in the corner. And it is going to be another Parramatta try.
Off the back of their CEO departing last week, I thought, you know, the boys responded to that adversity within the club, but to get a big win over the Cowboys, 32 points.
That was a cracking game. Like, it was very entertaining.
It was a fun game to watch.
Entertaining to watch. Even just, what about that hit that Jason Thumwalola put on
Mitchell Moses? Put some straight on his back.
But he gets back up, the small fella. But yeah, I thought for both these sides, man, that was a cracking game of footy to watch.
And I do know that it ended with Mitch Moses. You know, he got hit in the head. He was on the ground. And then Parra took the 2 points, and that was the difference. But again, the rules are the rules. The ref's the one that controls the game. And you know, if it is the penalty, well, you got to move on and shouldn't be in. If you're a Cowboys fan or if you're the Cowboys organization, yeah, you've put yourself in that position where it is 30-30 at that stage. But well done to the Eels. There's only three more games to go, round 25, 26, 27, and you can hear every NRL game live on ABC Radio Australia. But before we move on to rugby union, Sammy, I want to stick with rugby league because there's been some chat around this third v fourth game being played on grand final week. So if you get eliminated in the semis, the NRL have reported that, you know, there could be potential of playing a 3v4 game on that same weekend. What are your thoughts?
Don't like it. Don't like it at all. For those who have played in a 3v4 playoff, which I have a couple of times, it feels...
Oh, where'd you play it?
In our World Cup stuff for like 19s and 20s.
Okay,
so I played for a third. And look, it looks good when you win the bronze medal type of thing, and you still get a medal, you know, in terms of like the outcome of it. But, you know, getting up for that game after you put so much effort into getting to the big dance, you're just like going, bro, get me out of here, I'm done. Like, to then try and get yourself back up, like the week of prep, the coaches are like going, bro, what are we playing for? Like, seriously, for like a 3v4, what does that mean? What's the outcome? It doesn't change anything really. Like, you don't get anything the following year. It doesn't give you a better position on the ladder for next year. It's just, let's just move on with it. I think there's other games that you can play in that game or schedule for that game compared to being 3v4. You got Indigenous All-Stars. You got the PM's 13 with PNG. You've got all those type of games that you can play. I just don't think a 3v4 is going to do anything.
Yeah, my view on it is that there's already so much footy being
heaps
played.
Heaps of footy for those players. Yeah, let them have
27
rest.
Rounds plus Origin, plus PAC Champs or World Cup, plus the finals, plus the trial series. So there's a fair bit of footy. And if you've gone through the whole season and you're finished in the top four, you're one game away from making the grand final. Only one game, 80 minutes. Yeah. And say if you lose that game, the last thing you want to do is have to put your hand up to play in a 3v4 match the same weekend where you missed out on playing the grand final. The other thing is that there's also international games that are being played not long after the grand final. Now, players would have in their back of the mind, they would not want to risk the risk of injury, playing for the risk of injury. So, yeah, there's a price to everything. There may be incentives, but you know, what is that cost? What does that cost for the players? But also, what effect does that have? Because if that cost go up, does that mean grand final team have to go up?
I guarantee there'll be more
teams that play in the GF.
I guarantee there'll be more injuries in that game compared to the semi-final game that would have probably been played at a higher intensity because everyone is up, ready to go. So you have your alert levels, you're pumped, you're ready to go because you're in with a chance of making the big dance. But when you've got to have that come down and try and get yourself back up, you're playing not to get injured, not necessarily whether you win third or fourth. So I just think the players put their bodies on the line so much. And you've said it, they play so much footy Like, what's the point? Like, let him have a rest, because the people that don't make the eights, they've been off for ages.
I'm also thinking, as a fan, do I really want to watch a 3v4th match? Like, is it exciting to watch two teams that got knocked out and missed out in the grand final, and they probably played each other not too long ago. Like, could have possibly played each other to make that top four. So.
Not a fan, Bruss. Not a fan at all. I don't care in that one. But yeah, I like that everyone's always thinking, though. I love that there's always something.
Oh, there has to be innovation. Yeah, That's why the game is always growing. So,
yeah. Good discussions.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to rugby union.
Hey, my name's Lydia Kavar, and you're listening to Nation Footy.
Yes, it's time to talk rugby union here, and we'll start off with the Fijiana side that went down to South Africa over in Fiji. And although Fijiana went down 29 points to 22, much improved performance from Fijiana. You know, last week they went down 55 points to 12 against a powerful South African side. But this time around, Fijiana had the lead at halftime. 10 points to 5, and we've seen some beautiful tries from Buna, Buleki, Nailolo. They all scored for Fijiana, but it just wasn't enough to get the win against a very strong South African side. So hopefully they can take all those learnings into their upcoming test matches. But we'll go over now to the men's with the Wallabies playing against Japan. And the Wallabies won 56 points to 17. It was a tight first half. The Wallabies were only in front 21.
What was that, the score?
Final score, 56-17. That's what I was saying last week. Like, Japan are very good at probably getting up for that one-off test match. But, you know, when you've got to pick yourself back up again and be able to go, oh, man, I've just put everything out there for that one. Now we've got to back that performance up and go another gear. That's where Japan probably don't have the players and the capability to do so at this point in time, but I've got no doubt in the future they will. And I'll give credit to the Wallabies as well. Defensively, they looked the better side compared to last week. Only 14 missed tackles out of the 128, so that was impressive. They only gave away 5 penalties the whole game, which is a fantastic stat. And they just won all the possessions that required, you know, line out and scrum. So when you do that right, you put yourself in a really good position to win test matches. And what was really interesting about this game, I think it's the first time ever no back has scored a try. Have you ever heard of that before?
Not one back has scored.
Out of the 8 tries the Wallabies scored, all through forwards. The
middle. Wow.
So big.
What does that say about Japan's defense in the middle?
Well, I think what big Daniela Tupou scored 2 tries. Also, Brendan Bangamosa also scored 1 as well. But I think, yeah, the defensively off first phase in those first couple of carries with the backs, like Hunter Paisami, really got behind the Japanese defensive line. And then once they got in behind, the forwards really flattened right up and just ran these hard lines, and they were just able to overpower Japan and be able to score tries. And I just thought the forwards did a really good job in A zone to always come away with points. So that's something that the Wallabies can look forward to, because they're going to need it when they come up against a big Argentina side in a couple of weeks' time, where they've got 2 test matches back-to-back over there. They're a massive forward pack. So, yeah, all the best to the Wallabies in their future test matches, and a good start for Les Kiss getting 2 wins in a row. The All Blacks, you see this one, 50 points to 19 over the Bulls.
The Bulls?
The Blue Bulls.
I just seen a post that you done over social media with that old school Bulls team running out of the tunnel.
Right. And I'm glad you went there, because that's what I wanted to
see. Scary, man.
Right. You know, I honestly, that was the 2009 Bulls side that ran out of there, or that 2007, 8, 9,
They look
10.
Like they play for South Africa.
Bro, that was the South African forward pack that you watched.
Okay.
So when I watched those players came out, like Victor Matfield, Buckies Botha, Brian Habana, Pierre Spies, Dani Russo, like that was peak Super Rugby in 2009. And so I was only 21 at the time.
And you played them?
Played that exact side a fair few times. And when they won the grand final in 2009, they beat the Chiefs 61 points to 17 at Loftus. And that side, the Chiefs had Stephen Donald, Liam Messam, Richard Kahui, Sione Luaki. Like, they were stacked as well. But when you played over there, and when I watched that clip of them running out of the tunnel, I remember in 2009, I didn't play that game because I got injured the week before against the Stormers. So I was just carrying the waters and setting up, you know, the bench and stuff.
Yeah.
And our boys were out there on the field for the Western Force, bro, 45,000 Bulls supporters there. And it's hostile, bro. When they run out of the tunnel, right, they don't just walk out and jog out, bro. It's like they get to this point of the tunnel and they sprint out the tunnel and they just don't stop. And it's to this Afrikaans song and the flags are waving. And I just remember looking at these guys. You'd say I'm pretty tall, eh?
Yeah.
Bro, think of like another head taller than me.
And wide as,
like 125, 30.
And you're still early 20s. 21.
So I was looking out there like going, I'm so glad I'm not playing this game. Like, they were huge, bro. It's just, watching the All Blacks being over in South Africa just really brought back all the memories of touring over to South Africa and how much of a religion rugby union is in South Africa. Like, it really brings the country together, and there's such a rich history and like a colourful history as well, where it was divided, but that's what rugby does. It brings people together over there. The All Blacks now play
We didn't even care about the game. It was
50-19. So they're looking good, the All Blacks. 50-19. Yeah, they're looking good. They're looking sharp. And they'll play against South Africa in their first test match coming up. But to round us out for Rugby Union, big congratulations to Satiki Tuipulotu, who has been named the new Tongans women's head coach. So we'll get him on soon. But that's us, T. Where are we off to?
We are off to Shelley Long with the Long Story Short.
The Long Story Short with Shelley Long.
Yes, joining us on this beautiful Monday is Shelley Long, our PNG Orchid star. Shelley, I heard it was your birthday last week, so happy birthday. What'd you get up to?
Thanks so much for that, guys. I ended up spending my birthday at work, and then I jumped in the car for 5 hours to go to Captain's Run, played on the Saturday, and then drove straight home to watch my partner play on the weekends, on the Sunday.
What? You spend your birthday in 5 hours in the car?
Yeah,
your coach
I did.
Couldn't give you Captain's Run off,
well, she was
surely.
Suspended anyway. She got suspended last week.
Oh, so you didn't even play.
Well, I didn't play last week, but it was my first game back.
Oh,
so I had
suspension.
To my team that I was committed and I was willing to take that 5-hour drive up to Cairns and see my team do Captain's Run, play the following day.
Damn.
That's so, commitment. 5 hours in the car on your birthday. How many candles?
26.
Oh, man. Still young.
Still young. Still young, guys.
Yes.
I know you're imagining being 26 again. It's okay.
Yeah. I wish my legs would feel 26
thinking,
again.
How far ago was that? But anyway.
10 years ago.
All right. Well, let's move on to NRLW over the weekend. We had round 7 kickoff, and there were some great scores across the board. I'm going to start with the Sharkies versus the Cowboys, because I know you love the Cowboys. And also, last week we had Tiana Penitani on our show. And yeah, look, she's probably not here because Cowboys won 30 points to 18. Who stood out for you in this one?
Well, for me, I always love my North Queensland Cowboys team, but I really thought China Pallada stood up well against her former team, the Cowboys. She ended up putting Ash Masters on her back. Ash Masters was running from the backfields on a kickoff set, and China Pallada absolutely nailed her, which you don't often see. So to see that come out in that game against your former team, I loved that. But for me, I think it was a bit of a tough game to watch, in the sense of at the beginning it was a lot of back and forth plays. There was then the sin bin that happened, and I think that really opened up the game for the Cowboys to come in and take away the game.
For the Sharkies, obviously they've got a lot of talent in their side. What do you think's going on there? Like, because they are searching for answers to try and get another. They've only had one win, but man, just to put a performance together that we know that they're capable of.
I think when you look at how the last couple of weeks and how they've had to do a lot of last-minute changes throughout the game, the week before I watched China Pallada go into the centres and then she was out on the wing. They had a lot of injuries happen in that. Chante Kiriaratu is out with some injuries. Nevada George is also out. So they've had a bit of unfortunate luck heading into the last couple of rounds. And I think when you watch that game, they were in it. It was a very tight game, but then they got a sin bin for a hip drop tackle, and that put them out 12 players versus 13 players. And in that game, when it's a fast game, that player is needed. And the Cowboys exploited them for that space.
Yeah, I know that Sharks have been hurt with injuries, especially at the start of the season, missing Tiana Penitani. But Look, there's also two other teams that have only won one game in the St. George Illawarra Dragons and the Parramatta Eels. So they're not alone at the bottom of the table there. But I want to shift over to the Tigers versus the Warriors. Now, every Friday we have Sala Tongatuki and she on our show, Indonesian Footy, and she last Friday just looked like she had this positive smile on her face. And it's good to see her happy.
It was just like a ray of sunshine coming through the airwaves and just a side of Sala we haven't seen in the past couple of years because they said that they've won, I don't know how many consecutive games.
I think it was like two each year maybe.
Two each year. So they've won more games this year than they have since they've started NRLW. But oh my goodness, it is nice to have a happy Sala on our show.
But the Tigers, you know, came up against a pretty strong Warriors team, including Mele Hufanga. But what did you make of this victory for the Tigers being their fifth one in the competition so far?
Yeah, so like you touched on, Sam, this win that they've had actually beats the wins that they've had accumulated for the last 2 years in the competition. So for them, that's a massive milestone. I think when you look at the game that the West Tigers produced against the Warriors, it was again another tight battle. Towards the last 15 minutes of the game, the West Tigers ended up bouncing back and they were able to score a couple of tries off of that, which put them into 30 points to 22 against the Warriors. But for me, who really stood out and I think has been standing out consistently has been Emanita Parkey for the Warriors. I like her playing in that half position. She's a skillful young player. She's been in there in the centres previously, but to move into that half position, I think it really suits her. For the West Tigers, you look at Sala, her carries. I think she's in a little bit of a pickle at the moment for a potential crusher tackle. You know, I think the cohesion on the field and the way that they're playing for one another is really shining through in their wins.
Yeah, she was very confident last Friday and she also mentioned how Racine McGregor's played such a big role in their team so far. And the Tigers are now sitting at fourth. If you asked me at the start of the season where they would be sitting at this stage, I would not be saying in the top four. But great work to the Tigers. Want to touch on the Titans. They had a big win against the Dragons, 26-10. Titans are currently second on the ladder now, only losing one game, but geez, they look like a good footy team. What have your thoughts been on that game, Shell?
Oh, I'm loving watching the Titans play lately. I think the likes of Avani Osaka, Laker Clark, and then you've also got Sienna Lafipo in that team. I think they're a solid group there, a lot of experience. And I think when they just come out, they're so strong and dominant in what they do, and they're doing it really well. And I think each year they've been building on it, and this is the year where they're icing it at the moment. And to come up against a team like the Dragons, they're a bit of a rusty team. They have their wins, they take their losses too, but to be able to beat them 26-10 just shows the talent and class that the Titans have. Sometimes when you are a good playing team, it's easy to drop to the way the other team is playing, but for them they didn't do that, and that's something that I love to see.
Yeah, they didn't have the best year last year as well, and a good friend of mine is their assistant coach, Aaron Booth, and I bet you Boothy would be smiling this year so far. So good to see the Titans girls doing well. And we had the big game in round 7, Broncos versus the Roosters, the grand final rematch from 2025. Look, the Roosters getting the job done, 34 points to 20. What'd you make of this one?
Oh, I loved it. I love when you see the top teams come up against each other. But for me, Amber Hall back out there for the Sydney Roosters, she looks amazing. Her offload game just brought Taryn Aiken into play. Taryn Aiken's 50th game, so a lot to ride on for the Roosters in that competition. For the Brisbane Broncos, I think they were missing, you know, they missed their Ali Brigginshaw. They missed their the likes of being able to get her and Tamika Upton working well on the edges. I think when you look at that, though, Sydney Roosters, potentially grand final. In saying that, though, the Broncos, that is their second loss. So they broke their win streak last week. They've then lost again. They'll go up against the Titans next week. So there's the potential for them to have three losses in a row. The Titans will be going into this game thinking, you know, that this is the game that they can really dominate in the NRLW.
Yeah, Titans home game on Sunday lunchtime. So looking forward to that one. Thanks, Shelley, for joining us this Monday. And yeah, it's good to see that you're still here.
It's good. Well, T, no, you before that bit, before that bit, I was going to say, T, you brought your A game. But when you the way you finished that, I was like, oh, my.
No, last week I wasn't here, and I don't think Shell was on the week before, so it's been a long time that I've got to see your face. So thanks, Shelly, for joining us here on Nijan Footy.
Thanks, guys.
All right, later, Shell.
Hi, guys. My name's Antiana Talakai, and you're listening to Nijan Footy.
T, I reckon every rugby league and rugby union player knows, or every athlete will know, that the journey to the top isn't smooth, and I guess for the majority of players, it's not going to be a fairy tale finish. And at some point, every player will have to make a very personal decision: do you keep pushing through, chasing the dream, or do you step away and finish up altogether? So it's always a tough decision; it's never easy. And we're going to chat to a good friend of mine who, when I finished up my career, my last year at the Waratahs, he was starting out his career. His name is Tian Tau Akipulu. And just after 24 years of age, after achieving his dream of potentially making his debut at Super Rugby, he decided to walk away at the age of 24 when he should be at the peak of his career. But this is going to be an amazing chat, and I think it's one for everyone to understand. Hey, sometimes you just got to have to make a tough call and do what's best for you. And he's certainly done that. And he joins us right now to talk about his decision around leaving rugby at the age of 24 and what the future looks like ahead for him. Tian, it is good to see you, my friend. Thank you for jumping on with us for Nijan Footy.
Thanks for having us, brothers. Very grateful to be here and excited.
Mate, I'm very excited. Just before we get into, I guess, the good stuff, I still have those boots you gave me. They're called the Career Savers, the jogger style, you know, the jogger style boots, T.
The cricket shoes,
yes, has a nice cushioned heel on it. And Tian, you were coming back from your ACL, weren't you? Or did you just do your ACL, or were you coming back from it?
Yeah, I was coming back from ACL and then trying to come back from a hamstring strain as well, which is weird because I was sort of at the start of my career wearing those boots.
I know, and then I was I needed some boots. The old bulls come back from Japan, and then you've gone, bro, do you need these boots? Because he must have saw that, the running.
I was holding on.
He goes, here you go, bro. This might help you. So I'll never forget that, bro. And they're still going strong today. But man, let's talk about you for a second before we get into the decision around you hanging up the boots at such a young age. You know, what was it like for you around chasing a dream for footy as a youngster coming through? You played New Zealand schools, you know, hot prospect. Everyone was after your signature. But what was it like for you, you know, chasing that dream and having professional rugby as a goal?
I guess when I was younger, you know, everyone grows up just loving the game. I grew up, first I was in the living room playing some knee rugby, and then when we were big enough, we were allowed to take it outside. Runner straight challenges were always a thing growing up, and then I was fortunate to, I guess, find my feet. I spent a few years at Ipswich Grammar that produced a few prospects there, and then had an awesome opportunity to head over to St. Kent in New Zealand. And that's where I started. That feeling of, oh, maybe I could make this a thing, was a very slow first year, but those last 2 years, just found my feet, put some size on. Yeah, I was lucky enough to play New Zealand schoolboys the last 2 years of school, and man, those players in those teams. And a lot of them are playing international, which is crazy. And just to think we were kids sort of doing the same thing. It felt like I was a student athlete back then. Felt like I was living the dream, which is crazy because once I did move into that environment, I was like, I sort of understand it because I've been able to do that.
Did I hear correct? Did you grow up in Australia and then move to New Zealand to play New Zealand schoolboys?
Bit of a back and forth. I was born in New Zealand, South Auckland, to be exact. And then when I was 5, my parents decided to relocate us to Brisbane, where I had done most of my growing up there, 10 years before heading back over to, New Zealand, again to St. Kent's.
Oh, because usually, you know, you hear the story,
the other way.
Yeah, Kiwis coming to Australia for more opportunities, but you've gone the other way. Yeah, what was that like, making that decision and deciding that you were going to go to New Zealand for schooling?
And that was a huge, huge opportunity. I remember when my old man first told me about it, I think I started crying just because I was like, do I just stay here, you know, stick with my friends here, be comfortable? This could be something that could change the course of what my career could look like. Mm. And I was so grateful I did, because it was sort of those things where you're a big fish in a small pond type thing, and you go over there to a huge rugby school, you always hear about 1A, the other big schools, Auckland Grammar, Sacred Heart, and St. Kent's was just another one of those. I remember heading over, and there was Etienne Nanai Satora, who was still in school back then, and I remember just looking at him. I was like, bro, this superstar's still here. He's been killing it for years. And yeah, it was hard at the start, obviously being away. I went straight into boarding, but then I just grew to love it. Mm. It's probably one of my fondest memories, yeah.
That's special. Whereabouts is your family from?
We're originally all from South Auckland, but my mom's Samoan, her village is Falepuna, and my dad's Tongan, and his village is Kolonga.
I didn't know that you were half Tongan.
Really?
Nah. All this time, I just thought you were Samoan. There we go. Because when I was looking at your last name, I was like, hey, that sounds Tongan. But I wasn't sure. Because you're a pretty quiet guy. Like, it was very hard to get information out of you when we were there. You just giggled in the corner. Maybe because I was just loud there. But, you know, we'll talk about your footy now. Obviously, you sign with... So out of NZ Schools, you sign with the Waratahs, I believe, or came out. Is that how the journey started into professionalism?
Yeah, it was very, very behind closed doors type thing where... When you play New Zealand schools, you have to sign a loyalty agreement. So I'll talk about it now. It's long gone, but I signed an academy deal with Auckland. However, they did have a clause on my deal saying if I did decide to relocate, we can mutually terminate the contract. And I remember meeting with the Waratahs when they played the Blues 2019, met with Tim Rapp and Simon Cron, actually. He doesn't remember meeting me back then. He said he had too many head knocks, but I met with them. And that's pretty much where it started. I had enough credits to finish school, didn't have to sit any exams. So once term four was finished, I didn't even finish term four. Once I had all my stuff packed up and moved back over to Australia.
And then the feeling of signing, like, you know, you've worked hard. You win with the Waratahs, you know, a big club in Super Rugby. You know, what are your thoughts and feelings going into your full-time program?
Yeah, I think that's the thing that attracted us, was to be able to be in a full-time environment and just be around all those players. But it was tough, man. That first preseason is still my hardest preseason to this day. We had Troops, Anthony Katrupi, and it was during that time of all those bushfires in New South Wales. I remember we'd be walking out of the meeting room or the gym and it's just grey outside. You're just inhaling all that smoke and it was hot. At the same time, all our yo-yos were no good, so all we had to do was run the whole time. And boys got fit, lost heaps of weight. We just kind of weren't able to do it. More skill, I guess.
There's them yo-yo tests were always difficult.
So hard,
especially if you miss your target.
The return.
They're like the smaller version of a beep test, but more intensity, and you get tired faster.
Yeah. Yes.
I remember that one because no one had any good scores. They put all the scores on the board, and you had to stand up and say your score out loud. Just one by one, everyone's just getting up.
When you went into that, like going straight from school and then going into the full-time environment, it was always, you know, it is a dream come true, but was it everything that you expected as a young kid, dreaming to play rugby union as a job, and then, you know, you get your opportunity, you go into this environment, was it everything that you dreamed of when you were a kid?
Yes, and a bit more. I didn't realize how quick you had to learn on the go. Mm. That was probably the thing that took me the hardest, I remember. I remember sitting in a room learning these lineouts, and they said, all right, boys, get your boots on. We're going to run through them. I remember for me, Wikes, you probably knows, in that environment, I'm always the guy who stands in the back. I need to first process everything. I need to see how it's done. And that took me a while to be able to learn things on the go and just didn't realize how much training we were going to do. I remember getting to the first Wednesday day off and I was shattered. We only had 2 days. I remember, I don't know how I'm going to keep doing. We've got another 2 days on field.
2 days in.
We're going to be swimming. And I was like, on Saturday, I was like, oh, man, I'm not even good at that. That's when I really started questioning.
Looking back now, when you were a kid dreaming of being in the shoes that you end up getting to, what advice would you give to your young self?
Get fit.
To help prepare. To help prepare for that moment.
Probably, for those who do know me, I'm a big overthinker, where I do get a lot of head noise around things, where there's times where, like, I love working hard. I love being in the grind. But there's times where I'm always overthinking it, and you get burnt out. That's probably the side I didn't perfect as much. Mm-hmm. I don't mind getting on the line. It's part of the job. It's the mental side of things where I feel like if I'd done that better, then, you know, who knows what could have happened.
Yeah.
It's such good advice, man. It's not you realize, like, talent is such a small part of playing professional rugby. It's all the other stuff in between that allows you to excel in those high-pressure environments. So, it's not for everyone. Everyone says they want to do it, but once they get there, the questions do creep into everyone's head of, like, oh, I don't know if I'm about this life. But, you know, you had a bit of a rough start as well, a couple of knee reconstructions, ACLs. Like, how did you take that on board to then go, oh, man, I've got to now bounce back from this. It's already hard as is, but now I've got to do it. Coming back from an injury.
Yeah, man, it was tough. I was actually fortunate enough to debut first year out of school straight after COVID. Played a couple games, and then all the boys started coming back. Then I started asking to go get out of the bubble to go play some club rugby. I knew for myself, as a 19-year-old tired prop, I just need some footy. Play one game, shoot shield. The next game, ACL was gone in the second minute. And you know, you try to be one of those tough guys and think you can go back on. And they were trying to check my knee, but I remember my ankle just ended up, kept going. So my ACL was definitely gone. And when I actually got the news that it was gone, I was shattered as well. You always hear it only takes one injury for it to all end. I remember telling my parents, and I was crying, but I just knew injuries are part of the game. I understood there was a bit of work to do, and I probably got to a stage where I was just too invested in the injury itself, where I could see all the boys back playing. I was like, oh man, I want to be on the field. I spend my nights, Saturday nights in the gym, where those first couple months, I probably could have just taken a back seat and just, I guess, sit in that emotion so I can move forward and take my time with it. Got to a point where I finished all my testing, just had to get a month of full team training done. I'm at 20s camp. I run this line, get the ball, try to take off, hamstring goes, and then come back. I end up doing the hamstring again, that same one, come back again, same one again. So it ended up being quite a long stint. At the same time, I'm one of those people who understand a lot of other people have a lot worse. So I guess it was one of those things. Injuries are part of it, but like, again, that mental side, if I just tapped into it a bit more, then it could have changed.
Yeah, it's tough always coming back from injury like that. And, you know, you worked hard to get back, you know, but the opportunity ended up being with the Western Force. And I do want to get to the point of, you know, like, you're there playing, you're probably, like, as a tight end prop, you peak at the age of 25, 26, 27. But now you're playing over there, and then you've decided that at the age of 24, you don't want to play anymore. Like, what got you to that point? Like, and how long were you thinking about this moment to say that I don't want to play footy anymore?
Yeah, it was probably off the back of my time at the Tars. I would have had a similar decision, but it would have been made for me, where I didn't really have anything going for me at the back end. Obviously, body wasn't holding up as well. The Force threw me a lifeline. However, that year, I played all the games, played Aussie A at the end of the year. We were still just lingering around. And 2025 was where I was starting to feel it a lot. I remember playing against Moana. I was probably a bit underdone. Missed part of the preseason. Was getting blasted in the scrum. My mum flew all the way over from Brisbane to come watch us at HBF, and we ended up in an ambulance together. Which I feel bad for her, wasting her money coming. But just at, during those few weeks that I had off coming back from the injury was when it really started hitting, I guess. And one of the things I actually didn't really pick up until later was I started asking a lot of the boys how long do they reckon they'll keep playing for, until one of the boys said, well, why do you keep asking that? I was like, oh, I don't know if I'll keep playing for so long. And it just kept going on like that for a few months. But the moment where it really hit was, I remember heading back into preseason. I actually still had another year left on my deal. And we're going through these meetings. I sit with the GM. We obviously talk about how I have 1 year left. And then he mentions that he's keen for me to stay around. So there's early talks of possibly extending. And the, one of those things, it was just brush past in one ear at the other. Same thing with meetings. I remember sitting in some of these team meetings and coaches are talking about, we've got to do this, this, and this if we want to make finals or if we want to push to win this thing. And same thing, it just brushed past me. And I didn't really notice until later on. I remember rocking up to training one day. I just had that feeling that I was ready to move on. I guess I kind of just needed that push. I spoke to my older brother and he just said one thing that pretty much, I guess, confirmed it. And that call probably went for 30 seconds. And he just told me, sounds like you really made your decision up on your heart. After he said that, I finished the day, went about, didn't tell anybody. And then finished the day, drove around the corner, started crying and called my rents. That's pretty much when I made the decision up on the spot.
I think it takes a lot of maturity to go through that process, but then, you know, really sit with it and then understand the position that you're in and, you know, listening to your heart and your emotions. And, you know, credit to you for, you know, getting to that, having the confidence to make that decision. Cause, you know, I could dare say that there'll be a fair few players in similar positions that probably have the same thoughts and, you know, whether that's at the same age or even further down the line, to put yourself through that and come out the other end to, you know, make peace with it. It takes a lot of bravery but also maturity. What were you feeling like when you did make that decision and told your parents? You know, what were the emotions like? How did you feel within?
Man, that was, to this day, probably the toughest conversation or phone call I've had to make, just because they knew nothing about it. You know, parents sacrificed everything, sent me over to a school in another country to be able to chase my dreams. Once they understood it was coming from the right place, I just felt like so much weight was lifted off. Mm. And it just felt like I could be myself. Obviously, a decision like that comes with a lot of thinking. I knew I did slowly fall out of the love with it, which is probably hard to come to terms, not just to tell them, but even to myself. I knew that this period was going to be a lot tougher post-game, so I was like, I'd rather do it early, get in front of it, and by the time I was meant to retire, you know, who knows what life could be like. I'm forcing myself to learn these lessons, and now I can go out and share it.
Your life's just getting started, so I'm looking forward to and excited to see, you know, your journey and how far you go and where you go. But what are some of those plans that you've, you know, have you got to the stage where you're starting to plan out what's next, or you're still going through that process of transitioning out of the game?
Those first few months were tough, man. I tried everything under the sun. My conversations with my AI, I was asking, what could I do? What should I do? And that's when I got into creating content, which is, I guess now I know that I do want to get into that athlete well-being space and accommodate and start those conversations that I feel it's a struggle. A lot of athletes do struggle with this time when they have to move on from the game. And if I can open up those conversations with that space, that safe space, then, you know, we can all learn from each other's stories.
So what have you learnt around wrapping your identity up in professional sport or rugby compared to saying, like, there is life outside of it? Like, even though we feel like, hey, man, how can you give up or finish up at such a young age? Someone's crawling over glass to be able to do what you do, but you've said, nah, yeah, not now. But you're right, man. When you finish up, your identity's wrapped up in being Tian the footy player or Sam the footy player, T the footy player, but you have to face that. So what have you learned around that identity piece.
It's a good thing you say, like, that was probably the other thing that I struggled to understand, is that there would be so many people who would train an arm and a leg to be in that position. But that identity piece, like, my life outside of the game was pretty non-existent. And that's why I struggled a lot when I did finish on from the game. I had to rediscover myself. Obviously, Waxy, you knew how I was back then. I didn't say much. However, it was, you know, it was my whole life, this game. That's why I put everything into it, all my eggs in the basket. And, like, that's why I found it really tough moving on from the game, which is weird because I thought if I can move on from the game on my own terms, it would be a whole lot easier. I guess that just wasn't the case.
No, your life's just getting started, man.
One final one from me. You know, 50% of the playing population is of Pacifica heritage. Now it's in the men's and the women's game, rugby league, rugby union. It's popular for our family. You know, as you said, you want to do it for your family. What's your advice to a young Pacific Islander kid coming through the ranks to understand that, okay, there is a journey here? What would be your main bit of advice? What you've gone through, what you think would help them coming through?
I only just learned this saying before, which was to understand who you are and where you're from will help you understand where you're going. So using that as a superpower, but also, like, our people are so much destined for more instead of just the game and on the site. And you guys are doing a great job on the microphone behind. Like, our people can do anything. Our people are the hardest working people in the world, you know? They just need a bit of guidance and destined for so much more. It's crazy and it's exciting at the same time.
Voyages, brother.
That's a perfect. That's what I was looking for. Like, you know, we don't have to feel like we're only destined to be physical and play sport. We have so many other opportunities out there, and you're doing an amazing job. I wish you all the best, bro. Honestly, Tan, it's been a pleasure to sit back and talk to you. Like, in my head, I'm still thinking you're coming back at some point. It's just a little sabbatical for a couple of years. Tight head prop, you can go way into your 30s. Martin Arnold's playing until he's 44.
Yeah, crazy,
but I just think that the work you're doing is probably more important anyway, to be able to understand that there are avenues outside of footy. So for that, man, Ofalahiatu, I thank you so much for joining us. Your message is going to ring strong throughout our people. So, yeah, we wish you all the best for the future.
Thanks, brothers. Thank you.
Give me three answers for this one.
Our game of Gimme Three, our version of categories.
Last week, man. Sorry to interrupt.
I was thinking about it.
But she got 3 points for you, so that's all that matters.
Oh, nice. Well, this is our game where we get to keep a score. At the end of the year, the loser has to buy the winner a jersey of their choice. It's our version of categories. Gimme Three, and it's my turn to ask Sammy. Sammy, what's the score?
It is 32 points to 24.5. Yeah, Tiana, my question. I forgot it was me on last week, so you know me. I had to try and find something on the fly. But anyway, let's see if I can close the gap.
Give me three of the top four teams from the 2025 ladder, so after the regular season.
Yep.
Give me three of the top four teams that are outside of the eight.
Okay.
Right
now, the Broncos are definitely...
One, yep.
One. The Melbourne Storm.
Two.
And the Raiders.
They would have been my... I was going to say 11 and down, but they were the three. So, well done. You got the three.
Did I get the three?
Can you believe that last year...
I know. The minor premiers?
How it finished. Raiders first, Storm second, Bulldogs third, Broncos fourth. And those four teams... Bulldogs have a very, 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 very small chance.
Very slim chance.
But other than that... Those other three teams ain't making it.
Well, that's the beauty about rugby league.
And I've just handed you three points.
Thank you for that. It helps prepare everyone out there. It helps to prepare so you can perform. So give me three. We need some work on.
We also give a reminder of, you know, the NRL.
Let me wrap it up, son. That's us for today. Tell your footy loving friends about Nisian footy. Find it wherever you get your podcast or on the ABC Pacific website. And we will catch you on Friday with Nemani Nondolo Kundrani, Tinera Arona, and hopefully Salatomatu.
This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.